A Slight Case of Sunstroke, first published in Galaxy, September 1958, as The Stroke of the Sun, collected in Tales of Ten Worlds.
Someone else should be telling this story. Someone who understands the funny kind of football they play down in South America. Back in Moscow, Idaho, we grab the ball and run with it. In the small but prosperous republic, which I'll call Perivia, they kick it around with their feet. And that is nothing to what they do to the referee. Hasta la vista, the capital of Perivia, is a fine modern town up in the Andes, almost 2 miles above sea level. It is very proud of its magnificent football stadium, which can hold 100,000 people. Even so, it's hardly big enough to pack in all the fans who turn up when there's a really important game, such as the annual one with the neighboring Republic of Banagura. One of the first things I learned when I got to Perivia after various distressing adventures in the less democratic parts of South America was that last year's game had been lost because of the knavish dishonesty of the ref. He had, it seemed, penalized most of the players on the team, disallowed a goal, and generally made sure that the best side wouldn't win. This diatribe made me quite homesick, but remembering where I was, I merely commented, "You should have paid him more money." "We did," was the bitter reply, "but the Panagurans got at him later." "Too bad," I answered. "It's hard nowadays to find an honest man who stays bought." The customs inspector who'd just taken my last $100 bill had the grace to blush beneath his stubble as he waved me across the border. The next few weeks were tough, which isn't the only reason why I'd rather not talk about them. But presently I was back in the agricultural machinery business, though none of the machines I imported ever went near a farm, and it now cost a good deal more than $100 a time to get them over the frontier without some busybody looking into the packing cases. The last thing I had time to bother about was football. I knew that my expensive imports were going to be used at any moment and wanted to make sure that this time my profits went with me when I left the country. Even so, I could hardly ignore the excitement as the day for the return game drew nearer. For one thing, it interfered with business. I'd go to a conference arranged with great difficulty and expense at a safe hotel or in a house of some reliable sympathizer, and half the time everyone would be talking about football. It was maddening, and I began to wonder if the Peruvians took their politics as seriously as their sports. "Gentlemen," I'd protest, "our next consignment of rotary drills is being unloaded tomorrow, and unless we get that permit from the Minister of Agriculture, someone may open the cases, and then..." "Don't worry, my boy. General Sierra or Colonel Pedro would answer airily, "That's already taken care of. Leave it to the army." I knew better than to retort, "Which army?" And for the next 10 minutes, I'd have to listen while an argument raged about football tactics and the best way of dealing with recalcitrant referees. I never dreamed, and I'm sure that no one else did, that this topic was intimately bound up with our particular problem. Since then, I've had the leisure to work out what really happened, though it was very confusing at the time. The central figure in the whole improbable drama was undoubtedly Don Hernando Diaz, millionaire playboy, football fan, scientific dilettante, and, I am sure, future president of Perivia. Owing to his fondness for racing cars and Hollywood beauties, which has made him one of his country's best-known exports, most people assume that the Playboy label describes Don Hernando completely. Nothing but nothing could be farther from the truth. I knew that Don Hernando was one of us, but at the same time, he was a considerable favorite of President Ruiz, which placed him in a powerful yet delicate position. Naturally, I'd never met him. He had to be very particular about his friends, and there were few people who cared to meet me unless they had to. His interest in science I didn't discover until much later. It seems that he has a private observatory, which is in frequent use on clear nights, though rumor has it that its functions are not entirely astronomical. It must have taken all Don Hernando's charm and powers of persuasion to talk the president into it. If the old boy hadn't been a football fan, too, and smarting under last year's defeat like every other patriotic Peruvian, he would never have agreed. But the sheer originality of the scheme must have appealed to him, even though he may not have been too happy about having half his troops out of action for the best part of an afternoon. Still, as Don Hernando undoubtedly reminded him, what better way of ensuring the loyalty of the army than by giving it 50,000 seats for the game of the year? I knew nothing about all this when I took my place in the stadium on that memorable day. If you think I had no wish to be there, you are quite correct. But Colonel Pedro had given me a ticket, and it was unhealthy to hurt his feelings by not using it. So there I was, under the sweltering sun, fanning myself with the program and listening to the commentary over my portable radio while we waited for the game to begin. The stadium was packed, its great oval bowl a solid sea of faces. There had been a slight delay in admitting the spectators. The police had done their best, but it takes time to search 100,000 people for concealed firearms. The visiting team had insisted on this, to the great indignation of the locals. The protests faded swiftly enough, however, as the artillery accumulated at the checkpoints. It was easy to tell the exact moment the referee drove up in his armor-plated Cadillac. You could follow his progress by the booing of the crowd. Surely, I said to my neighbor, a young lieutenant so junior that it was safe for him to be seen out with me, you could change the ref if you feel that way about him. He shrugged resignedly. The visitors have the right to choose. There's nothing we can do about it. Then at least you ought to win the games you play in Panagura. True, he agreed. But last time, we were overconfident. We played so badly that even our ref couldn't save us. I found it hard to feel much sympathy for either side, and settled down to a couple of hours of noisy boredom. Seldom have I been more mistaken. Admittedly, the game took some time to get started. First, a sweating band played the two national anthems. Then the teams were presented to El Presidente and his lady. Then the Cardinal blessed everybody. Then there was a pause while the two captains had some obscure argument over the size or shape of the ball. I spent the waiting period reading my program, an expensive and beautifully produced affair that had been given to me by the lieutenant. It was tabloid size, printed on art paper, lavishly illustrated, and looked as if it had been bound in silver. It seemed unlikely that the publishers would get their money back, but this was obviously a matter of prestige rather than economics. In any event, there was an impressive list of subscribers headed by the president to this special victory souvenir issue. Most of my friends were on it, and I noted with amusement that the bill for presenting 50,000 free copies to our gallant fighting men had been met by Don Hernando. It seemed a somewhat naive bid for popularity, and I doubted if the goodwill was worth the considerable cost. The victory also struck me as a trifle premature, not to say tactless. These reflections were interrupted by the roar of the enormous crowd as play started. The ball slammed into action, but had barely zigzagged halfway down the field when a blue-jerseyed Peruvian tripped a black-striped Panaguran. They don't waste much time, I told myself. What's the ref going to do? To my surprise, he did nothing. And I wondered if this match we'd got him to accept COD terms. Wasn't that a foul, or whatever you call it? I said to my companion. Feh, he answered, not taking his eyes off the game. Nobody bothers about that sort of thing. Besides, the coyote never saw it. That was true. The referee was a long way down the field and seemed to be finding it hard to keep up with the game. His movements were distinctly labored, and that puzzled me until I guessed the reason. Have you ever seen a man trying to run in a bulletproof vest? Poor devil, I thought, with the detached sympathy of one crook for another. You're earning your bribe. I was finding it hot enough merely sitting still. For the first 10 minutes, it was a pretty open game, and I don't think there were more than 3 fights. The Peruvians just missed one goal. The ball was headed out so neatly that the frantic applause from the Panaguran supporters, who had a special police guard and a fortified section of the stadium all to themselves, went quite unbooed. I began to feel disappointed. Why, if you changed the shape of the ball, this might be a good-natured game back home. Indeed, there was no real work for the Red Cross until nearly halftime, when 3 Peruvians and 2 Panagurans, or it may have been the other way around, fused together in a magnificent melee from which only one survivor emerged under his own power. The casualties were carted off the field of battle amid much pandemonium, and there was a short break while replacements were brought up. This started the first major incident. The Peruvians complained that the other side's wounded were shamming so that fresh reserves could be poured in, but the ref was adamant. The new men came on and the background noise dropped to just below the threshold of pain as the game resumed. The Panagurans promptly scored, and though none of my neighbors actually committed suicide, several seemed close to it. The transfusion of new blood had apparently pepped up the visitors, and things looked bad for the home team. Their opponents were passing the ball with such skill that the Peruvian defenses were as porous as a sieve. At this rate, I told myself, the ref can afford to be honest. His side will win anyway. And, to give him his due, I'd seen no sign of any obvious bias so far. I didn't have long to wait. A last-minute rally by the home team blocked a threatened attack on their goal, and a mighty kick by one of the defenders sent the ball rocketing toward the other end of the field. Before it had reached the apex of its flight, the piercing shriek of the referee's whistle brought the game to a halt. There was a brief consultation between ref and captains, which almost at once broke up in disorder. Down there on the field, everyone was gesticulating violently, and the crowd was roaring its disapproval. "What's happening now?" I asked plaintively. "The ref says our man was offside." "But how can he be? He's on top of his own goal." "Shush," said the lieutenant, unwilling to waste time enlightening my ignorance. I don't shush easily, but this time I let it go and tried to work things out for myself. It seemed that the ref had awarded the Panagurans a free kick at our goal, and I could understand the way everybody felt about it. The ball soared through the air in a beautiful parabola, nicked the post, and cannoned in despite a flying leap by the goalie. A mighty roar of anguish rose from the crowd, then died abruptly to a silence that was even more impressive. It was as if a great animal had been wounded and was biding the time for its revenge. Despite the heat pouring down from the not far from vertical sun, I felt a sudden chill, as if a cold wind had swept past me. Not for all the wealth of the Incas would I have changed places with the man sweating out there on the field in his bulletproof vest. We were 2 down, but there was still hope. It was not yet halftime, and a lot could happen before the end of the game. The Peruvians were on their mettle now, playing with almost demonic intensity, like men who had accepted a challenge and were going to show that they could meet it. The new spirit paid off promptly. The home team scored 1 impeccable goal within a couple of minutes, and the crowd went wild with joy. By this time, I was shouting like everyone else and telling that referee things I didn't know I could say in Spanish. 1-2 now, and 100,000 people praying and cursing for the goal that would bring us level again. It came just before halftime. In a matter that had such grave consequences, I want to be perfectly fair. The ball had been passed to one of our forwards. He ran about 50 feet with it, evaded a couple of the defenders with some neat footwork, and kicked it cleanly into the goal. It had scarcely dropped down from the net when that whistle went again. Now what, I wondered. He can't disallow that. But he did. The ball, it seemed, had been handled. I've got pretty good eyes, and I never saw it. So I cannot honestly say that I blame the Peruvians for what happened next. The police managed to keep the crowd off the field, though it was touch and go for a minute. The two teams drew apart, leaving the center of the field bare, except for the stubbornly defiant figure of the referee. He was probably wondering how he could make his escape from the stadium and was consoling himself with the thought that when this game was over, he could retire for good. The thin, high bugle call took everyone completely by surprise. Everyone, that is, except the 50,000 well-trained men who had been waiting for it with mounting impatience. The whole arena became instantly silent, so silent that I could hear the noise of the traffic outside the stadium. A second time that bugle sounded, and all the vast acreage of faces opposite me vanished in a blinding sea of fire. I cried out and covered my eyes. For one horrified moment, I thought of atomic bombs and braced myself uselessly for the blast. But there was no concussion, only that flickering veil of flame that beat even through my closed eyelids for long seconds, then vanished as swiftly as it had come when the bugle blared out for the third and last time. Everything was just as it had been before, except for one minor item. Where the referee had been standing, there was a small, smoldering heap, from which a thin column of smoke curled up into the still air. What in heaven's name had happened? I turned to my companion, who was as shaken as I was. Mother de Dios, I heard him mutter. I never knew it would do that. He was staring, not at the small funeral pyre down there on the field, but at the handsome souvenir program spread across his knees. And then in a flash of incredulous comprehension, I understood. Yet even now, when it's all been explained to me, I still find it hard to credit what I saw with my own eyes. It was so simple, so logical, so unbelievable. Have you ever annoyed anyone by flicking a pocket mirror across his eyes? I guess every kid has. I remember doing it to a teacher once and getting duly paddled. But I'd never imagined what would happen if 50,000 well-trained men did the same trick, each using a tin foil reflector a couple of feet square. A mathematically minded friend of mine has worked it out. Not that I needed any further proof, but I always like to get to the bottom of things. I never knew until then just how much energy there is in sunlight. It's well over a horsepower on every square yard facing the sun. Most of the heat falling on one side of that enormous stadium had been diverted into the single small area occupied by the late ref. Even allowing for all the programs that weren't aimed in the right direction, he must have intercepted at least 1,000 horsepower of raw heat. He couldn't have felt much. It was as if he had been dropped into a blast furnace. I'm sure that no one except Don Hernando realized what was likely to happen. His well-drilled fans had been told that the ref would merely be blinded and put out of action for the rest of the game. But I'm also equally sure that no one had any regrets. They play football for keeps in Perivia. Likewise, politics. While the game was continuing to its now predictable end, beneath the benign gaze of a new and understandably docile referee, my friends were hard at work. When our victorious team had marched off the field, the final score was 14-2. Everything had been settled. There had been practically no shooting, and as the president emerged from the stadium, he was politely informed that a seat had been reserved for him on the morning flight to Mexico City. As General Sierra remarked to me when I boarded the same plane as his late chief, "We let the army win the football match, and while it was busy, we won the country. So, everybody's happy." Though I was too polite to voice any doubts, I could not help thinking that this was a rather short-sighted attitude. Several million Panagurans were very unhappy indeed, and sooner or later, there would be a day of reckoning. I suspect that it's not far away. Last week, a friend of mine, who's one of the world's top experts in his specialized field, but prefers to work on a freelance basis under an assumed name, indiscreetly blurted out one of his problems to me. "Joe," he said, "why the devil should anyone want me to build a guided rocket that can fit inside a football?"